Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biaja, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, November 11th, 2014. A top South Sudanese official opposes the power-sharing government endorsed by IGAD.
In the world, there is nothing called joint appointment. You appoint in consultation with or with the consent of.
And the first big convoy of food arrives safely from Sudan into northern part of South Sudan.
WFP Sudan has mobilized 18 trucks containing 700 metric tons of assorted food commodities, sorghum, pulses, and oil intended for South Sudan. And this was moved into South Sudan and first through the crossing point at Joda and then to Renk.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei says the government is firmly against a proposal made by regional leaders last week that President Salva Kiir should share power in a transitional government with the prime minister, who would most likely be opposition leader Riek Machar. The proposal was made recently at a summit meeting mediated by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, in Addis Ababa. As Philip Tonale reports from Juba, Makuei dismisses the idea as a non-starter.
Makuei says mediators from IGAD surprised the government team when they presented a new proposal on how power will be shared equally between the president and prime minister in a transitional government. Makuei says the proposal goes against what was agreed to at a high-level meeting in August. Then regional leaders agreed that the president will be head of state and government and the newly created post of prime minister will hold no executive powers. Makuei says IGAD heads of state and government who were at the summit in Addis Ababa last week rejected the proposal that the president and prime minister would share power.
And as such, it could not make any headway. It was put in the social media and people were made to believe that this is the agreed text. I'm here to inform you that this document is out of question. It was just a proposal which was presented and that proposal has been rejected. It is a non-starter. So we should not disturb yourself by quoting this document because there is nothing in it, actually. Instead, it created more confusion.
Makuei says the government will not accept this proposal because it will turn South Sudan into, quote, testing ground, unquote, for new principles of governance.
In the world, there is nothing called joint appointment. There is no joint appointment. You appoint in consultation with or with the consent of somebody. But there is no joint appointment because when you make a joint appointment, it means that the order of appointment must be read and must be signed by the two people. It is not a company. Government is not a company, so that it is run that way.
Makuei says the communique issued at the end of the IGAD summit is misleading. The statement says member state would intervene in South Sudan to protect lives should the two parties fail to respect the latest commitment to the January cessation of hostilities deal. He says the clause about outside intervention was amended after the two sides signed the document. He warns that outside intervention in South Sudan could cause the conflict to spread beyond South Sudan borders and inflame the entire region. But Makuei says the government is nevertheless preferred to make concessions and reach a final agreement to end the 11-month-old conflict that has killed at least 10,000 people and displaced nearly 2 million others. Among those concessions, he says, are that former government workers, including members of parliament, will be allowed to return to their jobs and represent their constituencies. He also says soldiers and military officers who defected from the SPLA will be reintegrated into the armed forces. IGAD leaders gave the warring sides in South Sudan 15 days from yesterday to hammer out the details of the transitional government, threatening them with stern action if they fail to reach an agreement or if either side violates the ceasefire. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
A Kenyan political analyst says leaders of South Sudan should learn lessons from Kenya's post-election violence in 2008 and work to resolve their differences. Wafula Buke says a power-sharing deal between former Kenyan President Mwai Kibaki and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga saved Kenya from sliding into a civil war. He says President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have the opportunity to stop the ongoing conflict and share power.
We managed to get out of the mess courtesy of the intervention of the African Union. And other international players like Americans moved in and exerted pressure on the incumbents to really submit to a discussion around how we can get a peaceful settlement. And those talks came up with what they thought was a way forward, which sought to really address, you know, issues of sharing of power as well as institutional reforms and other reforms that would guarantee a free and fair election in the future. In a way, the process was supposed to give hope to those who lost.
What were some of the motivations that really made President Mwai Kibaki and Raila Odinga see each other face to face and even share power?
They had to speak to each other because those people are being killed by day. In fact, at first it was the community that is perceived to be supportive of the Kibaki side, the Kikuyu, were principal targets. So when the killings went on, I think on the other side also, the other side decided maybe there was need to respond and direct that anger at any community that is perceived to be allied to the Raila side. So that bloodletting really compelled the two actors to submit to the pressure that was being exerted on them by the African Union and the international community to go down and hold discussions on how to really end the contest for power outside the legal framework.
And I'm sure you are following what is happening in South Sudan from December last year to date. If you are given an opportunity to advise the two principals in South Sudan, that's President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, what would your advice be to them?
They have no choice but to really, you know, give in to the demand for discussion. And when the discussions begin and start, you know, dealing with issues of sharing power, the incumbent has a tendency of holding the most important position, you know, issues dealing with defense and dealing with finance and economics and internal security. I would suggest that from our experience, I would request those who are in power at the moment to really be generous and really implement what is a genuine power-sharing arrangement, which gives the Riek Machar side an opportunity to have genuine control of some arms of government that are important, as well as the other side. That way, I think then it will not be likely that another criminal's contest will follow after the expiry of their term in office.
Given your experience in Kenya, what are some of the problems that come with power sharing?
One side may be determined to bring reforms. I would think that Riek Machar would give me that impression as being representative of what may really be better for Southern Sudan, in my opinion. And then the other side. So that difference in agendas always brings acrimony. Acrimony because, you know, you keep fault-finding. Because the contest for power doesn't stop. It extends up to the governance level once the coalition has been put in place. So, but the flip side of that particular contest is that the two sides watch each other. And one of the manifestations of the contest is that they kind of try to perform well so that they can impress, they can show that their side performed well.
That's Wafula Buke, a Kenyan political analyst. Buke is also one of the advisors of Kenya's Orange Democratic Movement Party. He was speaking to me from Nairobi this past hour.
Food security in South Sudan received a big boost yesterday as 18 trucks carrying 700 metric tons of food arrived in Upper Nile State from Kosti. The delivery marked the opening of a humanitarian corridor which allows food assistance from Sudan to reach its neighbor to the south. The United Nations World Food Programme, or WFP, has welcomed the safe arrival of this first convoy of food. For VOA News, Jacob Achek has more from Juba.
WFP spokesman in South Sudan, George Pomian, said This cross-border operation will help WFP use truck and river barge to deliver more than 46,000 metric tons of food to feed the estimated 275,000 people affected by the conflict in northern part of South Sudan.
Over the past week, WFP Sudan has mobilized 18 trucks containing 700 metric tons of assorted food commodities, sorghum, pulses, and oil intended for South Sudan. And this was moved into South Sudan and first through the crossing point at Joda and then to Renk or in Upper Nile State. And this happened over the weekend. On Friday, 7th of November, the trucks departed Kosti in Sudan, and on Saturday, the 8th of November, they crossed into South Sudan.
George said that 700 metric tons of food is enough to feed about 45,000 vulnerable people for 1 month in Upper Nile State. Yesterday, delivery should provide several months' worth of food support. Pomian said hair drops and hair lift of food are critical to sustaining food assistance in remote areas. But he notes that 6 or 7 times more food can be delivered by barge or roads.
So this is an important fact for us in WFP because it will help reduce our heavy reliance on costly air operations to provide assistance in conflict-affected areas of Sudan, particularly in the northern parts of South Sudan. And this will allow WFP and its partners to reach more vulnerable people with the urgent food assistance that they need.
Upper Nile State's Information Minister, Peter Hofquart, said the State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission will work closely with WFP to transport food supply to displaced people in hard-to-reach areas such as Reng, Paloch, and Maban County.
Which were loaded by World Food Program, arrived on Saturday in Reng County. Those food will be located to Reng, Paloch, and Maban. Four batch load will be distributed to Reng people affected by the situation, and a second will be taken to Paloch and Maban County.
Quoch hails this cooperative move between Sudan and South Sudan, suggesting that it could help normalize tense relations.
Recently, the President of the Republic of South Sudan went to Sudan to improve bilateral relations between Khartoum and Juba. And this relation is only there to help each other's country because Sudan itself has a large refugees in South Sudan, the same as in South Sudan.
Since December, South Sudan crisis, WFP has reached 2.5 million people with life-saving food and nutrition assistance. WFP is the world's largest humanitarian agency fighting hunger worldwide, delivering food assistance in emergency and working with communities to improve nutrition and build resilience. In 2013, WFP assisted more than 80 million people in 75 countries. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
Authorities in Central Equatoria State say an investigation is underway into the death of Cecilia Oba, the former mayor of Yei Town Municipality. Oba's body was found dumped at a home under construction on Sunday in Juba suburb, one day after her family reported her missing. Philip Thornaleo has this story for VOA from Juba.
Suba Samuel Manase, the Minister of Information for Central Equatoria State, says that Cecilia Oba and her office manager, Emmanuel Lemi, went missing on Saturday afternoon. It was at this point that Oba's family became concerned because her phone was switched off. Manasa says Emmanuel Lemi's wife contacted authorities on Sunday about the disappearance of her husband. Manasa says two bodies were discovered at a home under construction in Jebel on Sunday. He says he saw the lifeless bodies before they were taken to a mortuary on Sunday.
In the preliminary investigation, you can see that there was no gunshots. It appears they have been beaten. And also, the way we see, there was not much struggle or some signs that can show that the murder might have taken place in the site. It appears the murder took place somewhere, and then they were just dropped into that place.
Manasa says police are still analyzing the case to establish how the victims were killed and by whom. He says there are no leads about possible suspects and no arrest has been made.
Of course, such a technical investigation may take time, and particularly when it is hard to establish exactly, and of course the morph of at which they have to carry the investigation. If they have some difficulties in finding facts, it will always take time. But if at all they are able to learn into some pieces of information and makes it easy, then the public will also know. And of course, everybody wants to know. Their family wants to know. And everybody wants to know what exactly happened.
Oba was relieved of her duties as mayor of Yeitown Municipality in July. Governor Clement Wanikonga offered no explanation for sacking her. Before that job, she served as Minister of Parliamentary Affairs in the Central Equatorial State Government. Her killing in Juba, however, highlights how fragile the safety of ordinary citizens continues to be despite government assurances about the night patrol aimed at reducing crime rates in the town. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese teachers mark World Science Day for Peace and Development. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think a husband should tell his wife how to vote?
Definitely not. The right to franchise is one's personal choice and it's very intimate. I wouldn't tell my wife how to vote and she wouldn't tell me how to vote. We would have a discourse on who we want to vote for. I would like to persuade her to vote for X and she would like to persuade me to vote for Y, but it's her personal decision to vote for Y or X. Definitely not. That's a basic fundamental human right.
As a woman, if the husband is to tell you who to vote for, that is not being fair. It's not giving you your freedom of choice to vote as a woman if the husband is one to dictate. Your choice to vote is for your reason as to why you want to vote this person in. It may not be the same reason that your husband may be thinking you should vote for this person because I think of him as this.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we're talking about recycling. Plastic bags continue to change hands in Malawi 2 months after the government outlawed their use to protect the environment. Lamek Masina in Blantyre updated us on what is and what is not being done to reinforce the new law.
Malawi government announced the ban in August on the manufacture, import and use of plastic bags with a thickness of less than 60 microns. The announcement of the ban followed the end of the year-long grace period the government gave manufacturers to exhaust their stock. The government said penalties for non-compliance with the ban range from fines to imprisonment. But 2 months later, bags continue to be sold because the Plastic Manufacturers Association of Malawi filed a legal challenge in the High Court asking for the judicial review. Frank Mbed as the legal representative for the association.
What we were saying is that when they initially issued out a notice for the ban, effective June 2014, the manufacturers went to the minister and they had a discussion on whether it was appropriate to effect the ban in June 2014. So the minister, having heard whatever the manufacturers presented to them, gave them another notice in the form of a letter saying that we have extended the ban until June 2015.
Mbeda says it came as a surprise to the manufacturers when the principal secretary for the ministry announced the ban in August.
And we were also arguing that the principal secretary cannot have power to overturn a decision made by the minister. In terms of administrative arrangements, that's not proper, considering the hierarchy.
He says the manufacturers are asking the government to adhere to their area agreement to delay the ban to 2015. Mbeda says after receiving the legal documents, the High Court ordered the two sides to negotiate and asked them to report to the court within 14 days if they fail to reach an agreement. That 14-day period has now elapsed. The Minister of Natural Resources, Energy and Mines Director of Environment, Aloysius Campbell-Wheeler, told VOA both sides have agreed to take the issue back to the court.
What I can tell you now, we have been discussing and then we agree on a framework. So we need to report to the judge and then we are going to publish in the papers the protocol that will follow.
Campbell-Wheeler declined to discuss the framework agreed upon during the negotiations. Environmentalists have long accused plastic bags of posing an environmental and health hazard to people as well as animals, with the potential to kill an average one animal every 3 months due to an intentional digestion or inhalation. They recommend the use of environmental-friendly bags, which can either decompose or be recycled. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says he will seek a second full term as head of Africa's most populous country and number one oil producer. Mr. Jonathan made the expected announcement at a rally in the capital, Abuja, today. It came during a speech in which the Nigerian leader touted his record and called for a minute of silence to honor 48 students killed in the bombing of a secondary school. Somalia's parliament sank into chaos today as lawmakers tried to debate a no-confidence motion against the country's prime minister. Supporters of Prime Minister Abdiweli Sheikh Ahmed started shouting, blowing whistles, and banging on empty jugs soon after debate on the motion began, drowning out lawmakers trying to speak. And finally, a New York doctor who is the last known Ebola victim in the United States has been cured of the deadly disease and is leaving a hospital today. Officials in New York say that after a rigorous course of treatment and testing, Craig Spencer has been declared free of the virus. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
South Sudan marked World Science Day for Peace and Development this week. Established by UNESCO in 2001, the event is an opportunity to highlight the important role of science in society and to stress the responsible use of science for the benefit of society. South Sudan's teachers and child activists say the government must embrace research and science in order to improve the country's healthcare, agriculture, and infrastructure. Mugumi Davis Rakorinj visited a physics class in Juba to illustrate the challenge of teaching science to students in South Sudan.
When you enter St. Joseph Primary School in Juba at 9 in the morning, you are greeted by the sound of children giggling in classrooms, while air prints rumble in the distance. The school is only about a kilometer from Juba Airport. So the more than 1,300 students and staff have learned to cope with the life in the flight path. On this morning, Ochan Joseph Lazarus is conducting a physics lesson for 80 primary 7 students, 34 girls and 46 boys.
I gave you the note last week. Those of you who did not come, you are very unfortunate. But all the same, I am coming to explain the notes that I gave you. We said, in the definition, we said simple machines, they are devices that makes work easier. Who can give me an example of simple machine? Yes?
Caesar.
Very good. We call it pair of scissors.
Holding a pair of green scissors, Ochan explains how they operate. But some other simple tools are not available. For instance, a bottle opener. He instead draws one on the chalkboard to make sure they understand what he's talking about.
If you want to open a bottle, of course, you press it up. So that you open, this is the bottle top. This part will fix here. And as you press this, you put it upward. It opens. Is it clear?
Yes.
So the part that you fix hard onto the bottle is where the fulcrum is. This is the fulcrum. And then the effort is what you
in this classroom, Jamal Yunus emerged as top science student with an average score of 90% last term. He is motivated to study hard because of what he has seen in his community.
There is bad diseases here in our country. I want to become a doctor so that I will treat the sick people in my country.
Yunus says He knows about the shortage of doctors in his community and is determined to fill the gap. His classmate, 13-year-old Flora Arroyo, placed third in the physics class. Her career goals are just as high.
If I study science, like if I finish my school, I took science in my life, I will go outside and bring medicine to my country. Example, that they're telling us that the drug of HIV is not there. Maybe in future the drug of HIV will be there. Some of us will study science, they will go outside and bring the drugs of some diseases.
Their teacher, Otan, says he's pleased to be able to prepare these bright students for their chosen professions.
The lesson we had today, it is relevance in the garage, in lifting heavy objects that does not even need them to produce a lot of energy. Like we use a pulley system to lift heavy objects like containers, we put them on cars, even lifting cars.
But on the other hand, Otan admits it is difficult to keep fueling the curiosity and drive to learn for students like Eunice and Arroyo. Often, they seek out additional science books and research to improve their knowledge base. But they face a huge challenge. There aren't tools available for students to conduct science experiments or explore research theories. There are not even enough books to go around.
Sometimes when I went there, they said that it's not brought still. They said, let me go to the Ministry of Education.
Otan says a lack of teaching materials means many students would rather take art courses where the primary focus is theory.
Like now when I was teaching, there are supposed to be pupils' books that are distributed for them to follow at home and in the class.
We don't have microscope.
Esther Akumu, the Director of Development Partners in the National Ministry of Education, Science and Technology, knows the scenario all too well. She was a teacher herself for 20 years and knows what it is like to try and nurture young minds without resources. This becomes even more challenging nowadays when the country is in crisis. Education is not the focus during times of conflict. On the other hand, Akumu believes it should be.
We expect them, the young ones, to come up with the young mind, new innovation, to aspire becoming a doctor or great scientists, researchers. They can really do a lot.
Even with a lack of resources, the young, optimistic students in this classroom seem to believe they will make it to the top, and they bid an upbeat farewell to their visitor. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Don't Say No by South Sudanese artist Dynamic. This one goes out to my co-host Nabil Biagio because today is his birthday.
Thank you, John.
We've been listening to Dynamic with the song Don't Say No. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.